Welcome to EAA Radio. It's 12:46 on a beautiful day in Oshkosh, and
I'm Paul Pridecker, and today we have another guest from the National Transportation Safety Board, Mr. Dan Bartlett. Welcome, Dan.
And thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Tell us about what your work is with the NTSB.
With the National Transportation Board, I'm an investigator, and my specialty is air traffic control. So when they have elements of an accident or incident that have an air traffic control factor, I would go look at that particular part of the investigation.
So are you part of the go team, or would you?
I would be part of a go team.
And then you also support the investigation after the fact?
Yes. And for example, if there is an accident at Oshkosh and it has an air traffic control component, then I would look at the air traffic control component, for example.
So you come from a air traffic control background?
My background is military air traffic control.
Okay.
Yes.
And how long were you an air traffic controller in the military?
I retired from the Navy after 24 years.
Well, thank you for your service, first of all.
Thank you.
Where did you work for air traffic control in the Navy?
Everywhere.
ships
at sea, Kingsville, Texas, tactical air traffic control during Desert Storm. Military Navy controllers specifically are usually deployed everywhere. We don't have a single specialty. And after a 24-year career, you've pretty much covered every aspect of Navy air traffic control.
And pick up a lot of knowledge about how air traffic control works, and
yes,
very useful in your current position.
Very useful.
Yeah, Dan, when you're doing an investigation and there is an air traffic control component, can you tell us a little bit about some of the tools you might use? I mean, I assume the basics. You can look at radar tracks, you can listen to air traffic control tapes, but are there other tools that you use to come to a conclusion?
Analyzing the data is critical. Interpreting what you're hearing and why. Understanding the rules, the Federal Aviation Regulations, the air traffic control orders.
Yep.
There's things that can be done. There's things that should not be done. We look for compliance and cause and effect. We find if there's a situation or circumstance where a procedure was wrong and resulted in something, we look to modify the procedure.
And you do that through the recommendation process?
Yes. The NTSB, as you may know, is non-regulatory.
Right.
So our tool of the trade, if you will, is a pen and paper. So we make recommendations to whatever agencies are involved. And traditionally, that agency is going to be the Federal Aviation Administration.
Of course.
As the regulatory agency for aviation.
And we know that the NTSB has a very public face when there's a major incident or accident. But we also know that the NTSB is very involved in general aviation and business aviation. So are you investigating air traffic control situations for all of those accidents as well, if there is a component?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Because I would imagine that an air traffic control component is a broader problem, and it could apply to a smaller airplane or a larger airplane, and the same problem that you could learn about could be applied to more cases than just the specific incident you're dealing
yes,
with.
Yes, because the process, the procedures, if you will, the rules don't apply to 121 carriers and not General Aviation 491. They apply to aviation. So it's not rarely will there be something unique to a particular FAR.
Sure.
Flying is flying. The rules are the rules. Every airport is still an airport, and primarily towered airports, approach controls, and route centers.
So where are you based out of?
I'm based out of Washington, D.C.
Okay. Now, are all your investigators based out of Washington, D.C.?
We actually have 5 air traffic investigators on the NTSB staff. 2 of them are based out of Washington, D.C. 3 of them are remote. We have one in San Diego, one in Texas, and one in North Carolina.
And as I understand, a lot of your investigators can basically be based anywhere in the country.
They can, because you go to the site and you bring your skill set with you, your tools, and it's sometimes very convenient to be based away because you're closer to something else that may be happening.
So it gives you the agency some flexibility to get to various locations.
Quicker.
And you get to live where you want.
Mm-hmm. That's a pretty sweet deal.
There you go.
Where do I sign up?
Dan, if you could maybe enlighten our audience just a little bit. I know we often hear that the NTSB investigation process might take, you know, sometimes up to a year, maybe even more. Explain that. Is it just because it's such a thorough investigation that it's hard to look at all the data and there's so much analysis? I mean, can you give our audience just an overview of the investigation process and why does it take as long as it does?
Depending on the complexity of the accident, there can be many facets. For example, we have to look at air traffic control. We have to look at power plants. We have to look at toxology. We have to look at
weather.
Yeah. A lot of our data we can analyze relatively quickly, but then there are things we cannot. We have had accidents. We had one in Butte, Montana, 14 fatal. several years ago, and it was a very tough investigation to try to determine that the fuel froze. So a lot of lab work, a lot of experiments, a lot of trying to find this and that, and with no survivors, there's no witnesses, so it's a longer process. Toxicology is a big issue because it takes so long in some cases, depending on the nature. Continental 1404 was a runaway excursion in Colorado in 2009, if I recall correctly. That was a very tough investigation, and that had a lot to do with meteorological impacts on the aircraft. But we had to go places we don't normally go to find different things. There was a lot of lab work and simulation involved. So sometimes it takes a lot of work to peel that onion to get down to the core.
And talk to me just a little bit about foreign carriers. If there's an accident of a foreign carrier or a foreign aircraft in the U.S., are you automatically going to be part of that investigation?
We're going to be in charge of it.
You're going to be in charge of it. But the flip is not always the case.
We would be, there's an Annex 13. There's some rules for international investigations and where we would assist or have a designated representative to represent American interest. If the foreign carrier is an American-built aircraft, has American engines, has Americans on board, then we would have some role. And it's going to be dependent upon the nature, where it is. There are countries out there who request our assistance because maybe their accident investigation skill set or groups are not as robust.
Sure.
So it's situationally dependent.
And I understand, like, for example, in the Malaysian airline, the missing aircraft that you guys were asked to come into that for numerous reasons.
We were. MH370 is, I believe we launched three or four people on that.
And speaking of overdue accident reports, I mean, we're still looking for the airplane, so it's really hard to have a finding on anything like that.
You're absolutely right. I mean, what could you say?
Yeah. So that's sometimes the mysteries take longer than we would like to solve. But, the Air France, I mean, it took 2 years to find that airplane.
To find the box.
And we knew approximately where it was.
A lot more clues to Air France than there were for MH370.
Yeah, and the ocean is a very large place. That's one thing that I hear a lot of people, well, why can't you just find the airplane? And it's like the oceans, they're really big.
we had one of our traffic controllers looked at MH370 and did some very exhausting radar analysis of the data that was available.
Yeah.
So a lot of the search patterns were based on the available evidence. Mm-hmm.
And as I understand, their radar is not necessarily up to the same standards that we have over here.
That's, I think, one of the things that they found. But there were numerous countries involved.
Right.
So it's kind of challenging. We're spoiled in the United States in that we have the FAA and the FAA systems, but when you go into an international environment, there's a lot of moving parts.
Sure. Yeah, and how do you find when you're working on international events, do the countries generally work together well?
With accident investigations, from my experience, I have not done any international investigations myself.
Okay.
But from my perspective, it works pretty well. But it takes a lot of work to harmonize and make sure everybody's understanding what the objective is.
Yeah, and even simple things like speaking the same language could also be problems and slow down.
Yeah, we know you're located at the Federal Pavilion this week. What are some of the questions that you're fielding from the visitors to your exhibit?
Well, our theme this year deals with loss of control for general aviation.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of where we're going, and we have some video plays there. So we're kind of feeling those kind of questions, general aviation and loss of control issues. What happened? Why?
And you must have some education, outreach materials,
we
things
do.
On the
There's
web.
Thing. On the web as well as handouts, pamphlets, different technical experts from different areas from the NTSB are staffing the booth. For example, I'm air traffic control, then we're going to have an investigator, we'll have human factors. The different disciplines are there as well. And amazingly enough, one of us will be able to answer the question, if not all of us together.
Sure. I suppose there's not a huge component to loss of accident, loss of control of an airplane with your air traffic control side of the world.
No, but so we'll look in, why did an aircraft get in a position where loss of control occurred?
Oh, sure.
A VFR to IMC. An IMC
course.
Aircraft requesting assistance, was there an air traffic control component that could have been done, handled differently? But again, this is all situationally dependent. And we find a lot of different things.
Yeah, it's a lot broader than I originally thought about. And if people have questions and they're not here at the show, is there a way for them to contact the NTSB?
There is. We have NTSB, our website, ntsb.gov, is a challenging website, if you will. We're working on it. You know, it's better than it was, but that would be my initial recommendation.
And if somebody wanted to pursue a career with the NTSB, how would they do that?
Well, the NTSB website, again, that's where our vacancies are listed. Mm-hmm. And then from there, I think it's a USA.jobs.com process. But yeah. Yeah. Our vacancies are, as they open, when they close, I think we have several positions open right now.
What other materials can they find on the NTSB website?
Actually, we now have a YouTube site for playbacks, animations. All of our completed investigations are available on ntsb.gov. We're very open. It's just knowing what you want. We get a lot of questions at the booth about a particular accident, but they don't know the end number or they're not sure of the date. So we try and put it together when, what state, what date. So if you have a piece of the data of the information you're looking for, then ntsb.gov can help you.
And you can narrow down the search and,
yes,
and exactly. Hopefully find what you're looking for. It sounds like you have a lot of information. It's just a matter of getting to the, you know, find the right link to get there.
Yes, that's correct.
Have you been able to walk around and see a little bit of the show while you're here?
Not really.
I'm hoping to do that while you're here.
Yes, yes. Thank you.
Quickly, it's coming to an end, unfortunately. Unfortunately, the show is coming to an end also for today. We are running out of time, but we have been talking with Dan Bartlett from the NTSB. You're listening to Squawk 1200 with Wireless Mike.
And Paul Prediker, thanks for what you're doing for aviation.
Thank you.
Take care.